Welcome to today's episode of Speech and Debate. I'm Thaddeus Smith, and today we discuss the history, format, and evolution of public forum debate. First, we'll examine the history of public forum debate and find out exactly what happens to get it to this point in its history. Then, we'll look at the format of public forum and examine how it's changed over the years. And ultimately, we'll examine the evolution and where we think public forum debate is going to go next. All right, let's go ahead and start by getting into the history of public forum debate, and we're going to look at how it's evolved over the years. So, for one thing you have to understand is that at the beginning of the 21st century, the National Speech and Debate Association faced this crisis. People were not joining debate, and in fact, people were actively leaving. In Lincoln-Douglas debate, the participation grew stagnant. Nobody was joining Lincoln-Douglas at all, and in fact, policy debate membership, which was one the debate event everybody did, is decreased as people simply left the community. And many credited this drop to the fact that debate, as it stood, was largely inaccessible to many students. When public forum would be introduced, Lincoln-Douglas debate had already existed for 20 years and policy for almost 100 years, and both had developed conventions that limited their appeal to many people, which included things like high-speed speaking, which we call spreading, and technical arguments like critiques or theory. Detractors of policy also believed that these technical arguments, as well as generalized canned arguments procured from camps and debate institutes, lessened the educational value as debate as it stood. And moreover, several financial costs associated with policy and LD prohibited many people from becoming competitive, including the cost of camps and other institutes. Summarizing all of this exclusion, NSDA council member Donis Roberts wrote in Rostrum in 2003, "Our first target is students who do not debate now because current debate is a lifetime commitment. These are bright students who want diversified activities. They're not interested in researching a topic for a year or most of a year. They're attracted to academic decathlons, model UNs, Odyssey of the Mind, or similar contests. They want to play a game but not be consumed by the game. Our second target is schools that currently do not debate, maybe never have. We believe that the cost of complexity of current debate has made debate impossible for small schools and for schools without extensive financial resources. We want a debate division that is doable for schools like Chamberlain, Plate, or Parkston, schools that had debate 20 years ago, as well as schools like Harrisburg, West Central, and Tri-Valley, schools who have not ever had debate. The above examples are in South Dakota, but you know of examples in your state. We want to target a student who will debate if she or he does not have to miss school so much, or who does not have to compete every weekend to keep up or attend a summer camp. With computer scheduling on Saturdays, four rounds of debate could be held, plus semis and finals. We want talented teachers and schools to coach this division without having to learn the special language of the current divisions. These talented teachers currently advise quiz bowls, academic decathlons, etc. Because of the time commitment, they would not become involved with the current debate divisions. We need to have this division judged by community adults, chaperones, or teachers who do not need to learn a special language and listen to high-pitched speed talking. These people care deeply about public issues. Each round will move rapidly and only take about a half hour to complete." That's how NSDA Councilmember Donis Roberts outlined the thinking behind public forum debate in Rostrum in 2003. And in order to remedy those issues, they introduced a new form, but it wasn't public forum debate quite yet. This new form of debate was called controversy and was launched in 2002. And this was the brainchild of that NSDA council member, Donis Roberts. All of the original rule structure and framework for this controversy debate were created by the executive secretary of the NSDA at the time, James Copeland, with assistance from several other NSDA council members. The effect was stark. Public forum debate was much more aimed at the general populace than Lincoln-Douglas or policy, and Roberts predicted that by presenting exciting, current, controversial topics with a lively, brief, dramatic format, adults and the media would be willing to listen and students would be drawn to participate. At least on the latter, he was proven to. Only 5 years after launching the new event, the NSDA reported that more than 64,000 rounds of competition occurred within a two-month period. The NSDA introduced controversy for a trial year in the 2002 to 2003 school year. All topics were domestic and ripped from the headlines of the news. In the beginning, all judges were lay judges. No college debaters, ex-debaters, and debate coaches who were not classroom teachers were allowed to judge controversy. The NSDA also had funding issues in mind when releasing the new debate. As Roberts explained, with the decline of policy in LD, the NSDA has to grow to pay the bills. We have two ways to finance the core NSDA: raise membership, chapter dues, or grow the organization. Most of the grants to the NSDA are targeted, and less than 5% of the grant money can be used to operate the league. To stay even, we need to increase revenue from memberships, chapter dues, and merchandise sales by 5% a year. Not only would increased membership ease financial hardship, but Roberts also intended for controversy debate, what would become public forum, to be a televised event. He wrote, "An NSDA has no event to market to the media, whether the media is CNN, C-SPAN, cable access TV, service clubs, or parents. Policy debate and LD debate have become specialized, filled with code words that ordinary people do not understand on topics people don't wish to hear. Debaters often talk beyond the speed limit. Extemp has also become a documentation speech. Oratory has become insert, and insert has become filled with innuendo and explicitness. We want to reach an audience of adults and students in America through media as well as tournaments. Television is a key to almost everything. We might wish a different world, but it is not there. For heaven's sake, the National Spelling Contest and Geography Bee are on TV, yet we cannot find an outlet for debate events. In hopes of attracting the patronage of media like CNN, controversy was also called Ted Turner Debate after the CNN founder. And in the official rollout, the NSDA included a specialized format of the debate for television, adjusting the time to account for commercials. Now, while it was called Controversy or Ted Turner Debate throughout the early years, it very quickly became known as Public Forum Debate throughout the country. And we normally shorten this to PUFO out here on the West Coast. However, on the East Coast, they use slightly different terminology, often referring to Public Forum Debate as PUF. Now, Public Forum Debate, it was called Controversy Debate, and it did have its fair share of controversies. In 2004, it was allowed a part of the TOC, despite strong resistance from policy and LD proponents, claiming that public forum would only stand to lower the prestigiousness and the reputation of the TOC. And in October 1st, 2010... the NSDA announced that the November 2010 resolution would be an Islamic cultural center should be built near Ground Zero. However, there was almost an immediate backlash from the community, and within 24 hours, they changed the topic to resolved high school public forum debate resolutions should not confront serious religious issues. Now, since public forum's conception as controversy or Ted Turner debate in 2002, it's gone through some serious changes to get to where it is now. So next, we're going to look at the format of public forum debate and how it's changed over the years. So now that we've looked at the history of public forum debate, we can take a look at the format and look at some of these best practices that people in public forum debate use. So first, we have to look at exactly what public forum debate is meant to accomplish. According to the NSDA, there's four main things the public forum debate needs to accomplish. First, a public forum debate needs to display solid logic, reasoning, and depth of analysis. They have to utilize evidence without being driven by it. A debate has to present a clash of ideas by countering or refuting arguments of the opposing team in a rebuttal. And finally, the teams in public forum debate have to communicate ideas with clarity, organization, eloquence, and professional decorum. So let's go back and look at each of these in a little more detail. So first, public forum debate is based off displaying solid logic, reasoning, and a depth of analysis. And it's, you also have to utilize evidence without being driven by it. Now, what this means is that there's a significant more amount of commentary in public forum debate than you might see in policy or Lincoln Douglas, whereas policy and Lincoln Douglas are often driven almost entirely by the cards with just a few taglines scattered throughout the cases. Public forum cases are almost always different. Almost always you're going to see public forum cases either paraphrasing from cards or citing the source and then going into a detailed commentary and analysis as to what exactly that source means. So there's a lot more critical thinking skills involved with public forum debate than you might see in these other events. Now, when we go on here, you're supposed to present a clash of ideas by countering and refuting arguments of the opposing team in a rebuttal. Now, the rebuttal speech is something that's standard throughout all debate formats that the NSDA offers, so policy, Lincoln Douglas, and public forum. But with public forum debate specifically, it all goes back to that idea of using solid logic and reasoning skills. You can bring up evidence in your refutations, but you have to be able to explain and paraphrase from that evidence very coherently without just going back to read that card. And finally, the ability to communicate ideas with clarity, organization, eloquence, and professional decorum. And this all really goes down to that last bit, professional decorum. This shows that the NSDA really didn't want public forum. They really don't want public forum to go down the route that policy or LD has in these recent years. In recent years, policy and LD have become a contest of who can speak the fastest, who can cram the most evidence into their 7-minute or 10-minute speech, and you end up being left with something very inaccessible to anybody. So public forum debate tries to place a very big emphasis on communicating your ideas with clarity, eloquence, and professional decorum, essentially making it accessible to anybody, from a lay judge to a veteran policy debater. So let's look at the topic now. So public forum topics are typically worded as resolutions, meaning they advocate solving a problem by establishing a position. So teams have to understand the meaning of terminology in a consistent manner so that debates have a clash of ideas. If the topic were resolved, free trade benefits all nations, it would be absolutely vital to understand the concept of free trade. An expert definition from an economics or legal dictionary would be preferable to a standard dictionary. If the topic resolved NATO countries should act together on international manners, the more common terms act and together could be appropriately defined by a standard dictionary, but given the limited time of a round, which we'll get to in a minute, debate shouldn't center on these obscure claims. They shouldn't center on just the definitions, like oftentimes we see Lincoln Douglas or policy debates being narrowed down to. Debate should again go back and focus on the critical thinking and the reasoning skills involved with a public forum debate round. Now we can look at case development and evidence. So in a public forum debate round, a team has to develop both a pro and a con case, persuasively supported by evidence and reasoning. Given the short nature of a PUFO round, cases should center on a few high-quality arguments with good commentary. But a team should research several arguments on both sides so it can adapt its case to the opposing team's claims as necessary. Having arguments in direct contradiction with each other will enhance clash in rebuttals. An organization of speeches through effective communication and clear outlines is important to both judges and the opposing team so that they can follow each of the arguments and their supporting evidence. Effective persuasion requires credible, unbiased, quality-supporting evidence, which may include a mix of facts, statistics, expert quotations, studies, polls, or real-life examples such as anecdotes, analogies, or personal experience. Since topics are based on current events, research should be easily accessible through periodicals, web search engines, and think tanks. And teams shouldn't overwhelm their case with evidence, but they should select the best evidence to represent their claims and then provide that detailed commentary on the evidence. Now, unlike Lincoln Douglas debate where your topic is where your side, either pro or con, is decided before you even get around, public forum rounds start with a coin flip, where the winning team gets to select either the side they will argue, so they can choose pro or con, or they can choose the speaker order, either begin the debate or give the last speech, first speaker, second speaker. The team that loses the toss will then decide their preference from the option not selected by the winner. So if the team that wins the coin toss picks second speaker, then the team that lost will get to choose either pro or con. So the debate, therefore, unlike many other debate events, can actually start with the con side arguing against the topic. So The team has to consider what side of the topic is more acceptable to lay judges, on what side is the team stronger, on what side are the opponents stronger, and is the first speaker position critical to sell the case by making a good first impression? Is the final focus speech critical for the last words of the judges, or are the opponents so effective in either the first or last speaker position that the team needs to select speaker position rather than side? So you have a lot more, you have a lot more questions you have to think about when you're trying to decide what you want to do if you win that coin toss. So now we can get into like the real depth of PUFO, the speeches and the time limits. So public forum rounds are divided up into public forum rounds are divided up into 12 total speeches, or actually not 12 total speeches, are divided up into 8 total speeches with 3 crossfire or questioning sections divided up in between. You have the team A and team B. The pro and the con will both present a 4-minute speech with a 3-minute crossfire, then another 4-minute speech, 3-minute crossfire, then a 2-minute speech with a 3-minute crossfire, and then finally a 2-minute speech. And throughout that whole time period, you're given 2 minutes of prep time. So the first pro speech, so this is a 4-minute speech, it's your case. This speech constructs these arguments that advocate the resolution's worthiness. The key analysis is to present major reasons why there is a problem, and an underlying concept throughout all first pro speeches is going to be the risk of change versus the risk of not changing. The speech should have a brief introduction to frame the team's case for the judge. It should also provide a couple key definitions and a few reasons for adopting the topic should be presented. Each reason should be an independent reason to vote for the resolution and should explain why it's pertinent. And the speech should conclude with a summary of the arguments covered and open with a roadmap of what arguments you're going to cover. Now, you have to look back. As the pro, you have to be able to analyze the risk of change versus the risk of not changing. For example, with the November public forum topic, the United States should require universal background checks for all gun purchases and transfers of ownership. We see that on the pro, you have to argue why we should change from the status quo. The negation is almost always defending the status quo. Which brings us, of course, to the first con speech, which constructs arguments showing disadvantages of the resolution, why it should not be adopted. And if the pro speech has the advantage of a changing future, the con speech has a track record of experience, what we call the status quo. The negation has to defend the current system that is in place. And the rest of the speech elements will be the same as the pro speech. So then you get into the third and fourth speeches. So those third and fourth constructive speeches are rebuttal speeches, and you can use those speeches in about 3 different ways. First, you can go the stock route and you can choose to simply refute all of your opponent's arguments in great detail. Or you can split up your speeches, your refutation speeches, 50-50. You can spend 2 minutes refuting the opponent's cases, and then you can go back and rebuff your own case, bring up more evidence to support your own case. Or something that is becoming slowly and slowly more common is teams will not refute at all in this speech, and what they'll actually do is they'll save the refutations for crossfire, and they'll simply introduce more points into the debate to support their case. That's not very common at the moment, however, it's slowly gaining traction in the national circuit. The summary speeches, these are the fifth and sixth speeches given, or the third speech for each team. And these are complicated speeches because the debater has to find a way to explain issues in light of all that has happened so far in just 2 minutes without speaking too rapidly. They can introduce new evidence but not new arguments unless they're refuting an opponent's case. So you can only address the limited issues. And what is common is they'll narrow down the round to 2 or 3 voting issues, 2 or 3 main points of clash throughout the debate, and try to show how their side has won on all 3 of those voting issues. And then finally, you have the final focus, which frames with clarity why your team has won the debate. Again, no new arguments may be presented, but new evidence may be introduced to support an argument. Before the final focus, ask, if I were judging this round, what would I be voting on? And then use that to narrow down your voters. For example, with the universal background checks topic, your voters might be lives, as in, we save more lives than our opponents. That's an example of a voter that you could use on the universal background checks topic. Another voter you could use is racism. Maybe the universal background checks will lead to the surveillance state, leading to institutionalized racism. You can bring that up as a voting issue in the round. Finally, unlike policy or LD, in public forum, the quality of arguments is more important than the quantity of your arguments. You want to have just a couple very strong, fleshed-out arguments in public forum debate, and you want to be able to argue those very persuasively. Let me go on and we get to this idea of the questioning period. Crossfire and grand crossfire. So crossfire, we call the first two questioning periods crossfire, and they're both two people questioning each other. So those give the debate more interactivity, and they give the debate a chance to build clash. In crossfire, both debaters have equal access to the floor, but the first question must be asked by the debater who just finished speaking by a debater from the other team. So the person who spoke first gets the first question. A debater who attempts to dominate or be rude throughout crossfire will most likely lose points, and you want to be careful when you're answering questions so that you're brief and you don't give your opponent necessarily more information than he asks for. And then you get to this last crossfire, the third crossfire, grand crossfire, where all debaters ask each other questions. So you have both speakers from one team asking both speakers from another team questions about their case, about refutations, about impacts, about anything that took place in the round so far. Then you get to prep time. Each team has 2 minutes of prep time total. For very practical reasons, you don't want to use prep time until your summary speech or final focus speech. You want to be prepared with your refutation so that you don't have to run any prep time to prepare your rebuttals. And really, that's about it for the format of public forum debate. Public forum is, when you think of debate, you're almost definitely envisioning a public forum round. When the public imagines what high school debaters do, they almost always are going to be imagining a public forum round. Very clear arguments that are presented in a very logical and eloquent and professional manner. As opposed to policy or LD, well, those both have their pros and their cons. In the end, those aren't as accessible to lay judges due to the adoption of very technical arguments and the spreading that is completely widespread throughout those debate formats. So that's an idea of the format of public forum debate. Next, we're going to take a look at the evolution of public forum debate, how it's changed so far in its history, and where we think it's going to go next. So now that we've examined the format of public forum debate, we can finally kind of take a step back and look at the bigger picture. We can look at how public forum debate has changed over the years and where we think public forum is going to go next. So when we looked back, if you go back to that first section, we talked about the history of public forum debate, and we talked about how it was introduced as something that was meant to be televised, national level television, like the National Spelling Bee or Geography Bee. Those are televised on ESPN. And that's really the target market that the NSDA, or the National Forensics League, as they were called at the time, wanted to target. That's where they wanted to try and draw people and get the media interested and televise those national final rounds, or even the national tournament in general. But how did public forum change over the years? So over recent years, a few things have changed. So first of all, obviously, public forum has changed because it's not called controversy anymore. It's not called Ted Turner. I know I've never heard those terms used at all. So we see that it's evolved into public forum, just in name. We also see something that the NSDA instituted is in 2010, the NSDA officially allowed the use of computers in round. So over the years, the use of technology and the use of computers in round became more and more accepted. But what we've started seeing at the national level is something that, to many, is disturbing. What we've started to see is we've actually started to see some of these policy and LD tactics spreading, technical arguments. We've seen those start to seep into public forum from the national level. We've actually even begun to see some people running counterplans, almost. While the official NSDA ballot bans the use of counterplans, saying that you can only present very generalized alternatives, that hasn't stopped some of the national circuit members from running full-on counterplans and arguing for doing something else instead of the resolution, which is disturbing. After all, that starts bringing the public forum into the world of policy, into the world of LD, slowly but surely making it less and less accessible for the lay judges, and slowly but surely making it less and less acceptable for people who are trying to get into debate. And we see something else. We see that spreading has become more and more prevalent. I was at a tournament. I was at Pacific Lutheran University tournament in Tacoma, Washington this past weekend, and three of my judges at the tournament actively said that they're familiar with Modern PUFO, and that if we want to spread, go ahead. And that's disturbing. And it's disturbing because we see that it's spreading. We see that things that brings it closer and closer to policy and LD, which again many people view as having become corrupted over time. And the final big thing that we're seeing happen is we're just slowly seeing all of these technical arguments seep into public forum debate in much lesser forms in order to conform to the rules, but they're there nonetheless. You start seeing things like theory brought up more and more in round. People bringing into round these theory arguments, accusing the opponents of not following proper debate theory. We see more and more instances of topicality brought up in round, and ultimately, we end up seeing critiques brought into round in a minor form. We've seen over the past couple years, over my experience with public forum debate, I've personally happened upon two full-on critiques in a public forum round. I was observing a finals round at a tournament last year, and I actually saw one of the teams run an argument claiming that we can't talk about the resolution because the debate space isn't an ideal place to create change, and we can only talk about the resolution if we're actively creating change within our communities. They ran like that. And to me and to many other dedicated public forum debaters, that's disturbing. It takes the event away from its roots as an event that is accessible to everybody. And this has become so bad over the past several years that recently the NSDA introduced a new debate form, Big Questions Debate, supposedly dedicated to solving the broad philosophical questions of life, the universe, and everything, but ultimately only being dedicated to making sure that it doesn't become the next policy. And we see that very clear in the rules. They have very, very detailed rules outlining exactly what not to do and what to do in a big questions round. Making the debate, and this debate differs from public forum a lot due to those rules. So we've seen that the whole of the public forum community is slowly beginning a shift towards a world where spreading and technical arguments are extremely common. And that's not necessarily a good thing for public forum debate. But there's something else that's even more worrying about the trends in public forum debate. More recently, there's been large discussion within the community about the quality of public forum topics. Many debaters are concerned that PUFO is straying from its roots and evidence in a reasoning and rhetorical-based debate rooted in logic and facts and becoming more superficial, relying on the biases of the judge to make a decision. We see this most recently with the November topic, which in the wake of the second most violent mass shooting in world history leads to incredibly biased judges. And we see this again with the topic choices for December, both of which deal with sports and both of which are ripped straight from the headlines. And we've seen this throughout last year as well. We've seen slowly the topics are becoming more and more current. But as they become more and more current, then the lay judges become more and more biased. Until eventually it's not a debate, it's just luck of the draw, determining if you get a judge who has a predisposed bias towards either you or your opponent. And speculation within the community has led to a couple different schools of thought about what exactly has happened to Poufo over the years. The two largest are both on slightly extreme sides of the spectrum. The largest argues that the recent decline in quality of public forum topics is due to a need to rip topics straight from the headlines, trying to draw public forum back slowly, trying to make public forum possibly a televised event. But the other extreme side is that the Arthur and Ruppe Foundation, one of the NSDA's largest sponsors, who specifically sponsor public forum debate, has quote-unquote ruined the event. And while that may or may not be true, going online to any major debate community, either r/debate on Reddit or the CrossX forums online, you can see many people speculating about what exactly the Arthur and Ruppe Foundation has done to public forum debate. So, looking back over what we've discussed so far this episode, we can see we've discussed a few things. We looked at the history of public forum debate, and we looked at kind of how it's changed over the years. Then we looked at the format of the debate event itself, and we talked about exactly how we can make this good, and we talked about how this event can be made good and how what the best practices are. And ultimately, we ended up by looking over what has happened to form this evolution of public forum debate, and we looked at what could happen in the very near future if trends, current trends in PUFO, don't stop. So that just about wraps up today's episode of Speech and Debate. Any news articles cited, audio clips played, or music played during this podcast either fall underneath the fair use policy of copyright law or have been properly attributed in the description. Next time on Speech and Debate, we'll discuss how to write a national tournament-winning oratory. If you like this podcast, please leave a 5-star review. And if you didn't like this podcast, go online to our website, the link's in the description, and leave us some comments using the Contact Us form so that we can make sure that we make this podcast better for you. This is Thaddeus Smith, signing off.